to From Believing to Being, a podcast about pursuing meaningful spirituality after faith deconstruction. We're your hosts.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Dave.
We're two former evangelicals having an ongoing conversation about what life and spirituality look like after letting go of our religious beliefs. Join us as we discuss deconstruction, Christianity, mysticism, enlightenment, and consciousness, and most importantly, how to experience this new way of being in the midst of parenting, careers, and going about our everyday lives.
If you've recently left your faith or simply feeling pulled into a deeper way of being, we hope this podcast will encourage and inspire you and really just reassure you that you're not alone on this journey.
Welcome back, everybody. This is episode number 5, which is really exciting. 5 is my favorite number. Anyway, today we're going to be talking about the spiritual path or the various spiritual paths. What we mean by a spiritual path. Does everyone have one? What does it look like to be on a spiritual path? And how many different kinds of spiritual paths are there? So one thing that where I want to start, Dave, is what do you think of whenever you say spiritual path?
Yeah, the first thing that arises as I think of this, and I'll be honest, I've been thinking about this for a while. We've talked about this, as our topic for this week, connecting. But as we're talking about it now, the main thing that sticks out is this idea of a mountain, right? And I don't know if you've heard that before, but one mountain, many paths. Have you ever heard that terminology?
Yeah. Yep.
For some reason, that's sticking. It's like the spiritual life, if we want to call it spiritual, or we could just call it life in general, but I guess for this purpose, I'll call it spiritual. You know, it's one mountain that we're all climbing, trying to reach the same summit, but there's lots of different paths. There's windy paths, there's straight paths, there's, you know, mountain climbing, there's cliff climbing, stuff like that. So that's just the first thing that comes to mind, is that you know, there's a lot of different paths, but by and large, they're all seeking to get to the same point.
What would you say is that same point? Or is there a point to the spiritual path, to climbing the mountain?
Yeah, that's a good one, because you know my first instinct is, of course, you know, we want to live a life that is continuing to unfold in peace. You know, maybe that's the one, right? Peace is this idea that, you know, we're free from just the anxieties of life, and you know, we can take things in stride. You know, the Buddhist teaching would be suffering, right? That once we reach that mountaintop, we are liberated from suffering. But it becomes this point where it's like, well, are we getting too dogmatic to say, well, this is what's at the top? Is there a top? You know what I mean? So the mountain analogy comes to mind, but yeah, the more that I really step back and think about it, I'm like, well, is there even a mountain? You know, is there really a singular goal, or is it more complex than that we can't even really adequately put into metaphors?
Mm-hmm. You know, I saw something, I don't remember if it was on Instagram or Facebook or one of those groups, but there was a comment and the person said, the ego loves a journey. And that sort of, you know, tickled something in my mind, because for me, I've always identified as a seeker. And that was, I mean, largely almost even more so than a Christian, even though my seeking was definitely in the context of Christianity. I always saw myself as wanting to go deeper and continuing to seek and feeling like there was still something that I hadn't fully experienced. And of course, in a Christian context, I saw that as like wanting to go, you know, get closer to God, right? Like deepen my relationship with Jesus, that sort of thing. But whenever I saw this comment about the ego loving a journey, I don't know. It kind of started me down this way of thinking that we perceive the spiritual journey as a journey and as a path, right? But that really it's more, or it could be, right? Who knows? But that it could sort of be more of a recognition that, you know, something else is going on beneath the surface, right? And the reason that I'm saying that is because I was just thinking about how there is this like flow, like continuum, right? I mean, not necessarily a time continuum, but everywhere all the time, there's this, oh gosh, like energy for lack of a better term, but there's something that is going on that is carrying all of us, right? Because you could literally do nothing and you're going to continue to be carried along, or you could be atheist and have no concept of this idea of a spiritual path, and yet your life is going to still be moved along with some natural just energy, whatever. But it does sort of seem like the difference is that people who are spiritual or, you know, seeking are trying to, well, one, have recognized that there's something else going on, and two, are trying to tap into that. And so I was just thinking that, you know, the spiritual path, we perceive it as a path, but really it's more just like, you know, sitting in a puddle, and that moment when you realize you're sitting in a puddle, you're like, oh my God, the puddle's been here the whole time, but I just now realized that I'm sitting in a puddle. And then that changes, like that changes your approach. I don't know. Hmm.
So we're saying that suddenly a spiritual path is puddle sitting. Okay.
Gotta keep it humble.
Yeah. 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 You know, it's interesting. This energy and this continual realization and reflection on the path, right? Whatever it is, if it's waking up one day and realizing like, what the hell? Why is my butt all wet? Oh, I'm sitting in a puddle. Oh, that's right. That's what's causing this suffering. I'm sitting in a puddle. All I need to do is move. And you know, a fruit of the spiritual paths, but I guess here's a challenge that I have in the whole notion of the spiritual paths is, so going back to those words, journey, path, the word that I really struggle with is destination. I think it's really easy to insert that almost subconsciously into our discussion on paths, because you think of a path, it's like, well, I'm going up a path to get to a mountain, like the mountain analogy, like that there's a destination. And that is ego games, 100%. The ego wants to have something it's going to reach. And really I find that destination mindsets do more to take us out of being in the moment of a spiritual just essence, so to speak. And it can just be very derailing. But then you get to that, you know, paradox, because obviously there is a growth trajectory, right? I mean, why would we be seeking a spiritual life and following some sort of path or tradition if not for a hope of something? You know what I mean? So that's the that one of the tensions that I find with these kind of thought processes about a spiritual path is not allowing the destination mindset to come into play too much, and just resting in like that kind of surrendered way of being and just trusting almost a way that the path will unfold, but I'm not so focused and worried about where, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a really good point, because you're right that it's super easy to assume that there is an end game, you know, and I think some people see that too as like awakening or enlightenment, you know, if we're mm-hmm. talking about that particular version. Mm-hmm. Other people see, you know, I guess in Christianity, you would say it's the decision to follow Jesus, right? To accept Jesus as your savior, mm-hmm. that is sort of the end point, and almost that everything else that happens after that is not as exciting, or that you've kind of, you know, you've reached the destination and now you're just sort of living out what it is to be in that destination, but there's not necessarily anything really new to discover. I was listening to a YouTube video with Rupert Spira, and I forget what it was, but he was saying, he's a teacher of consciousness and the direct path, and that's other stuff we'll probably get to later. But he was saying that if you were looking at spirituality or whatever life as a book, and there were 12 chapters, that awakening or enlightenment would actually be the end of chapter one, right? That it's a critical point. And by awakening, I guess, coming to that recognition that there's something else going on that you can tap into, you know, whether that's God or consciousness or whatever. And so it's a really critical point, but that it's not the end game. It's not. And I think, I mean, when I first started reading all of these teachings about awakening enlightenment, I was under the impression that that was the end game, that that was what everybody was seeking. And I mean, I guess there's different levels of enlightenment, but now I'm beginning to see, oh, okay, so we tap into this understanding that there's something going on, or this just recognition, this acknowledgement, but it's not the end game. And the other thing that comes to mind is in the deconstruction circles, so many people talk about going into the wilderness, right? They talk about, oh, you know, I've lost my faith and I'm in this weird place and I've entered the wilderness. And they mean that place of uncertainty. And nobody sees that as the destination. Everyone thinks that it's just something that you have to get through in order to reach your goal, which, you know, in order to arrive or something. And I was just thinking the other day that it's almost like if someone was saying, okay, so we're going to send you on a trip and it's going to be awesome. The destination is incredible. And so they put you inside of a rocket and they launch you into space. They're like, congratulations, you've arrived. Where am I? Like, I'm in space, which is different. It's this whole other galaxy, like this whole other, you know, experience and this whole other world, but it's not really a destination. But that's kind of how I feel where I am now, is that I've been launched into this other place and it's like, yeah, you know, you're here, but here isn't really anything that you can define or that has like a concrete way of thinking or living. I don't know that. So yeah, that's my space analogy for you.
Yeah, I love it. And yeah, it's just a reminder that there's so many different ways to look at, you know, what the destination of the path might be. And the reality is, let's just say for sake of conversation, that there is a destination. Because so, for example, we both come from the Christian path, and you know, some may say we're still on the Christian path. I wouldn't go out and say, oh, I'm a Christian, but was born and raised into it, you know, living in the United States, which is, you know, Christianity is far and away the most significant religion in this country. So we're just swimming in it, as some say. Anyway, so to think that, okay, so here we are, we're on the Christian path, or for those that are on the Christian path, anybody listening, I'm sure that somebody out there listening is on the Christian path, and the destination would be heaven, right? And then the question becomes is, what is heaven? So again, I guess I don't want to throw out and be dogmatic that there is no destination, right? It's just that it's so easy to get into a space that refuses the now for the later. And I think that can be so limiting to a spirituality, to a healthy spirituality, that really, I think is a progressive comforting of being in the moment more and more. And so something I know we talked about a little bit, but I think it serves kind of where we're talking about with the deconstruction, especially, you know, you think about spiritual paths and Christianity, and you see this huge deconstruction movement that's happening. I mean, look anywhere on social media, especially, and you're probably going to find it. And you just got to wonder, is that people stepping off of the Christian path, or is it people deepening into the spiritual path or the Christian path? Sorry. You know what I mean? I think that there can just be really, deeper, and less tangible parts of the path that people end up going down. Right. So I think that's a really interesting just thought exercise, if anything else, to think that, oh, maybe this deconstruction is just really a deepening of the Christian path rather than a rejection of it.
Absolutely. I think that was actually one of the things that saved my spirituality after walking away from evangelicalism. A friend of mine, you know, first of all, he had made a comment that different denominations see doubts differently, right? There are other denominations that will just have a more welcoming approach to doubting and exploring your faith. And then from there, when I started exploring, like, oh, well, you know, God, like looking into Calvinism and stuff and Arminianism, you do start to realize that almost without even realizing it sometimes, how much of your faith has been structured into this denominational way of thinking. Mm-hmm. And unless you're really into apologetics and theology and really on top of what your church is teaching and what exactly your pastor is preaching, you can take in all of these like denominational beliefs, believing that they're biblical. And so when I started looking into other denominations, you know, I had kind of gone the route of like Catholicism a little bit, only because of St. John of the Cross. You know, he is credited with this book, The Dark Night of the Soul, and actually talking about that experience. And then when you start going into, you know, deep into the Catholic faith, right, which is sort of where some of the Christianity got its origins, when you start going down that road, you start to see that a lot of these great saints went through these dark nights of the soul. And then it's exactly like what you say, you start to realize that, oh, this deconstruction, one, it's nothing new. And two, this is actually supposed to be part of the experience, or it's almost like a privilege to have the dark night of the soul as being part of your experience, because the dark night of the soul is seen as God, like stepping away, like removing himself from you in order to draw you deeper in. And so, yeah, I love what you're saying, that, you know, too many people in the world of evangelicalism see deconstructing and doubting as being a rejection of the Christian path. But when you look to other denominations and other traditions, you see that it's actually part of it and that it's a good thing to be in it.
Yeah. And it seems as though, okay, so if we compare and contrast the predominant mainstream evangelical Christianity and the deconstruction movement, it is by and large beliefs that are being kind of reevaluated and like let go of, right? I mean, our podcast is named From Believing to Being, and I mean, really, that's a credit, a symbolism of our, you know, moving away from these beliefs that we once held firmly to. So it's interesting as we're talking about it in this context, I'm wondering if, you know, beliefs like these somewhat dogmatic beliefs about the nature of reality, about God, can really be a significant limitation, but also a comfort. So you talk about dark night of the soul, and those dark night experiences, spiritual crises. It's almost as though we let go of this security blanket that the beliefs were in our lives or are to some degree, and reach this maybe an existential crisis. And, you know, then if the God of Christianity, not making a claim one way or another here, but if the God of Christianity is legit and as described, would that God not really be kind of waiting to catch you as you kind of fall, almost like a trust fall, right? Like I am trusting, I'm letting go of this security blanket because it doesn't intellectually or intuitively work for me anymore. And I'm just going to fall into the abyss and see what happens. And wouldn't it stand to reason that same sovereign God would be there to catch you, right? So that it is a kind of a beautiful way. And I think that's the power of looking back, right, to what you're saying. I mean, looking back to the mystics and other writers throughout the history of whatever the tradition is. We're talking the Christian tradition specifically here, but there's Sufi mystics, there's, you know, ancient writers and all the traditions. And, you know, you're going to see similar themes of a continual deconstruction, so to speak, of beliefs and faith.
Exactly. You know, Meister Eckhart has been so transformative for me because he, when was he writing? Like the 13th or 14th century. Mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. You know, he writes about how when you let go of all of your conceptions about God, mm-hmm. there's an uncomfortable emptiness, but that's where God meets you. Mm-hmm. But it's not until you let go of all the things that you think it is, until you actually have space even for new ideas to come in. And as you were talking about the trust fall, you know, an image came to mind of teaching my kids to ski. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this goes for other things too, right? Like learning to ride a bike or whatever. You put these little tip ties on the kids' skis in order to keep them in like a pie shape. And so the tip ties just clip onto their skis. And so as they go down the mountain, they're constantly in a position to be able to stop, to snowplow down the mountain. But whenever you take the tip ties off, it's really scary because for the first time, your kids are in control of their legs. Like they're in control of where the skis are going to move and how it is. And it can be a really terrifying moment for the kids. And a lot of kids can beg you like, no, put the tip ties on. I'm not ready. But then if they can find the courage to go down with like, and let go of the belief that they need the tip ties, like let go of the belief that the tip ties were the things that were like holding them together, then the child like actually can experience the exhilaration of being under their own power. And I feel like, you know, Dark Night of the Soul is a little bit like that, is because we're not taught to because we're not taught that that is part of the path, part of the journey, part of like what it means just to, you know, work out what it means to be human. We see it as something really scary and we're super terrified about what it is, instead of realizing that it's an invitation. It's an invitation to this exhilarating life that you can have more control over. And so, you know, I wish for myself and for everyone else who is in that position that there would be more of an understanding that the dark night of the soul, while it is scary and really hard, it's an invitation. And so you don't have to be afraid. We're afraid because it's something new and we're having to let go of that security blanket. But in the end, it's just an opening into a greater way of being, into like flying down the mountain, you know, on a black diamond or whatever. I don't really ski, so I'm just borrowing from my kids.
Yeah, it's kind of, to use the other analogy of the butterfly that I know we like to talk about, mm-hmm. and go back to, it is the you know, the cocoon forming, that gets pretty dark, right? And then, you know, when you start to poke out, it can be painful and painful and painful, and you're growing these wings and figuring out how the wings work. But then, yeah, it's a totally different way of being, right? You go from crawling around on the ground to being able to fly and being a whole new creature that is, I think, you know, most would say more beautiful, right? I think if you look at a caterpillar and then a butterfly, you'd say it's more beautiful, all the colors and things like that. But it's a process, right? That metamorphosis process can be painful. So yeah, I think that's a really good encouragement to rein us back to the topic here is spiritual paths, right? I mean, it is a hallmark, a milestone of the spiritual path to be in a dark night, to be in a spiritual crisis. I know something else I've talked about, I think you and I have talked about this, is going through a sense of meaninglessness, right? It's almost like it's a milestone to go on a spiritual path and find like, well, what's the point of all of this, right? Like the Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, right? It's not saying everything is meaningless. So yeah, those kind of hallmarks. Have you ever gone through an episode, we'll call it, of meaninglessness?
So I've never had a dark time of that, but I have struggled with that idea of making meaning and sort of just like what. So for me, it's come more in the sense of meaningless around traditions, I guess, more so than an overall sense of, you know, why am I even alive? Like, why do I bother living? But more just sort of, I mean, Christmas is a good example, right? It's like we're coming up on Christmas, and there's part of me that really can't shake the fact that it's just another day, you know, and why am I working myself to the bone, like wrapping presents, you know, at 11 o'clock at night and racking my brain to try to figure out what gifts my kids would like and baking the cookies and doing all of this, when underneath it all, there's just like, why? I mean, and especially now after having left Christianity, when I'm not seeing it as a way to essentially indoctrinate my kids into belief, it does just sort of feel like, what am I doing all of this for? You know, why? What purpose does it serve? And so I felt that a couple of times, but never, I mean, fortunately, I feel, you know, I feel thankful that I've never been in such a dark place that I've ever considered taking my own life or, you know, anything like that. How about you?
Yeah, no, that's a good insight into Christmas, though. I will say that, you know, a couple of weeks away, and It's tough. I mean, that's really tough to be, whether it's full on deconstruction or really starting to ask the questions. I remember my first year into deconstruction, it was around Easter, and oh my goodness, it was really hard. I was just like, I really can't appreciate this, because everything was being called into question, and really to a point where, like, I could probably appreciate it more now, seeing like the symbolism behind it, the idea of resurrection, like, it's a beautiful concept, but I had to be away from it in that first year for sure. But yeah, so speaking of meaninglessness, and again, you know how I like to get weird and get esoteric with it, but you know, where the spiritual path has taken me, is, you know, I get, we talked about it a little bit last week, but this, you know, shifting from mainstream Christianity to more of a mystical Christianity, and then beyond, right, to infinity and beyond, as Buzz Lightyear would say. But you know, mystical Christianity is a good way to bring it now, because it, honestly, I think once you get to mystical Christianity, I think you can rest there, kind of.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it reaches the same, call it depths, and the embracing the mystery of the other traditions, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I experienced, and it, not necessarily in a mystical Christianity way, but more in just stepping into this like unknown and the unitive element of it, right? The non-dual element of reality that so many of these traditions point to, and I had some experiences where it was that. I reached this point where I was just like, well, if everything is one thing, and if I am just a manifestation of the one thing, what's the point? And I struggled with that. You know, I was just like, well, if this is all just one thing happening, flowing, and my individuality is an illusion, then what, you know, what's the point? It was a struggle. It was a struggle. That was just, you know, earlier this year. And I, you know, I got out of it, right? That was maybe a call it a mini dark night. It wasn't something that lasted for months or years, maybe a week or two at best. But it was tough. But again, I, to go back to what I said, is it's like, I look back at that, I'm like, I needed that. That was almost an integrative thing for me to go through that and really let go of. It was kind of like a little bit of an ego letting go, right? That, oh, like this part of me that seeks such meaning through my own individual life, just like evaporated for that season, because it was really embracing and into these other call it more emptiness paths and non-dual paths. It is hard to reconcile that, but then you kind of, you have to move on, right? You know, you move mm-hmm. on, and you're like, well, I gotta keep living and seeking to find meaning, however it may manifest, you know?
So when I don't know how far I was into deconstruction, but I, you know, the butterfly analogy, it's so good, perhaps a little bit overused, but I looked into it because I was like, I feel like I am in a fucking cocoon. Like, what the hell is this? What, this is like wilderness. Like what is this space that I am in right now? And, you know, someone had, of course, like you say, like, oh, I'm a caterpillar. Like I'm in the cocoon. I feel like something is changing and transforming, but I don't know what. So I went on YouTube, thank God for YouTube. And I looked like, what happens to a caterpillar in a chrysalis? So I'm like, I'm going to go all the way into this thing. Like what happens to a caterpillar? And it was fascinating because it's only been recently that they've actually been able to observe what happens in the chrysalis, you know, once the caterpillar's in there for a while, and the thing dissolves. Like, I think this is one of the things that, you know, we want a shortcut to the butterfly, right? We're like, caterpillar goes in the cocoon hardens up, some magic happens, and then out comes the butterfly.
Well, it's one of my daughter's favorite books, and that's exactly how it happens. Just in there, and then boom, it's a butterfly.
Right? And, you know, like, but it's not like the caterpillar completely dissolves into this mushy goo. And I think that what can happen to a lot of people is there's a point in the dissolving, you know, they're like, okay, I'm in this cocoon, like something is happening. I've let go of all my beliefs. I've entered into this space of, I don't know what, and they feel the dissolving start to happen. Some pain point, whether it's meaninglessness or loss of community or something, you know, I think that's got to be individual for every person, but they feel some pain point and it's like, I'm not going there. Like, no, thank you. Okay. And then they look for another way to like pull themselves back up out of, cause they're like, I'm not willing to go that far. I'm going to pull myself up. And I think that that is where a lot of people tend to find another church, go into atheism, like latch onto social justice, because losing whatever it is that they are, that they, because sometimes losing your beliefs is not the most painful part, right? Sometimes like for you, you know, the loss of meaning was, you know, might have been the most painful part. For me, losing my writing, which I felt like was like my ability to write, my identity as a writer, actually turned out to be the thing that was more painful to me that I did not want to go through than actually like losing my Christianity. And so I think that there has to be some other willingness that is like, I don't know what this is, but like, I've got to go into it. And that's like, you know, what it sounds like the meaninglessness was for you. For me, it was letting go of my writing, but then exactly like, I feel 100% like you that looking back, one, it's not nearly as painful now as it was in the moment. And two, it was such a critical moment of growth and a recognition of that, like that ego grabbing onto something. And now for me, I have such a looser grip on my writing. And something else that you were saying, it made me think of this idea that, you know, there's a fear about becoming nothing. Right. Mm-hmm. And I know on the Christian side of things, that verse about, you know, consider others, you know, above yourself or whatever, consider yourself nothing. Like I struggled with that. It was so hard. I was like, what about me? Am I not important? And now I have a completely different understanding on that. And now I can see how it's not until you're willing to become nothing that you're free to be whatever the fuck you want. And I mean that with a hard emphasis on the swear word, like really to truly embrace what you are. But until you go through that losing all of those identities, losing all that clinging to meaning and to your talents and to your identities, you can't get to that place of true freedom to be whatever you want to be, which is the butterfly place, I think.
Yeah, that's really good. And that's what the caterpillar does, right? I mean, I'm sitting here shuffling my brain, trying to think of like a different analogy we could use, but why? I mean, it's actually kind of funny and it folds perfectly into the broader conversation here. It's like, you know, we want to find a tradition and a path that works for us. And a lot of times we can be like, oh, well, what about this one? What about this one? And we sometimes forget to realize like, well, maybe the one that we are the most familiar with, which is our case, Christianity, maybe it's fine. Again, not saying one way or another here, but it's food for thought. But yeah, that dissolving, that caterpillar that has to dissolve. in order to get to the next generation of its being. Now, the where I'm looking, and maybe we can workshop an analogy here together, because I think that the becoming nothing is the ticket, right? It's the ticket to freedom to become what you were made for, right? What your essence is. So, you know, to talk beliefs for a minute, but I believe that, you know, my being is a manifestation of a higher power, call it God, consciousness, whatever, something that is manifesting in me for some sort of purpose. And it is that finding that nothingness to allow that to come out and take over, so to speak. But again, so going back to the analogy here, because I'm just kind of curious, like, because I think what we so often do is cling to things that are not that, right? We cling to things mm-hmm. that are us having an aversion to be nothing, like you said. So I don't know. I don't know what analogy we could use for that, but because I do think that that's such a fundamental reality for people, is that the more that we have these identities built up, these things that define who we are, we talked about that a few mm-hmm. episodes, right? The different glasses that we wear or the different hats that we put on, those things are just being fueled by a fear of stepping into that nothingness.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's not my favorite movie, but it has some of my favorite moments and it has a special place in my heart, is Finding Nemo, because I feel like it's not a perfect analogy, but I have thought about my identities and my beliefs as basically being a reef. You know, you build up these reefs in your life as, you know, like, I've got this career, I married this person, I have this much money, I drive this car, I wear these clothes, you know, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm this race or that race or whatever. And those become like our reefs. And deconstruction, you know, like the things that protect us, right? Deconstruction comes and starts chipping away at your reef. And so then you're tempted to like run over, you know, especially in the early stages, right? When you're just having doubts, every little doubt is like knocking down, chipping away at your reef. And so you rush over and you're like, oh, maybe if I read my Bible more, if I pray, if I go to a different church, if I sing praise songs, like something, you know, will keep me in place. Or even from just like a personal aspect, it can be like, oh, maybe if I get into a different relationship, maybe if I move, maybe if I change my job, like you're constantly trying to patch these holes in your reef anytime mm-hmm. something comes to challenge them. Mm-hmm. But then in Finding Nemo, right? Like something major, some major suffering has to happen in order for the dad to leave the protection of the reef. But mm-hmm. once he does, it's scary and it's unlike anything he's ever known. But then look at the amazing experiences he has. Like he learns what the ocean is. He, you know, all his life, all he's ever known is the coral reef. And he thought that was what he wanted, that that's where life was. And it's not until he gets drawn out into the wide, you know, the wide open ocean that he realizes there's these crazy things called jellyfish and there's sharks and there's dangers, but there's also just unimaginable beauty. And I feel like that's, you know, that's kind of like us, is you have to leave, you have to be willing to leave the safety of the reef and not continue to try to patch it up. You have to be like, all right, there's the ocean. I'm going in.
Mm-hmm. It sounds kind of like the hero's journey.
Yes, totally. Totally.
And I think that, again, as we step back and are willing to either A, hold our beliefs loosely, or B, just let them fall through, whichever makes sense. I think that's the nice part about holding things loosely, is that if they're not meant to be, they will fall through. Mm-hmm. And the more that we do that, the more, speaking from my own experience, but many others that I've heard and talked with about it, start to resonate more with the universality of myth. And I know you've talked about this before too, the universality of myth, that this hero's journey shows up over and over mm-hmm. and over again. And it is this, exactly what you're talking about. There is a suffering of sorts, a loss of identity, something, a loss of security. And then the journey of awakening, to use that word, to realize mm-hmm. who you are, to find yourself. And it's just like, you see this in myth all the time. You see it in movies all the time. And you ask yourself, why? You know, mm-hmm. What is that? And I say that kind of facetiously, because it's like, well, I think there's something there. There's something mm-hmm. in the human collective consciousness, the psyche, that it really was built that way. It's just part of our humanity. Mm-hmm. I just think it's really neat. And it's suffering, man. I think it's such a tricky one, because you never want to tell someone who's in suffering, be like, this is great. You are on the hero's journey. Way to go. Like, just embrace it. Like, you can't do that. You have to just be there for people in suffering. But then it's almost all, I shouldn't say almost always, because it's very circumstantial, depends on the person and how they go through it. But very often we look back on our suffering and we're like, that was pivotal to my life. Mm-hmm. That was huge to me becoming who I am. That was my cocoon experience, right? That was my dissolving experience, however it may be. And I think the difference is with these spiritual paths that we talk about. And I think one of the questions we ask is like, do we even need a path? Do we need a spiritual discipline? Do we need the tradition, or do we just need to let go? And I think the difference is that the path and the tradition is almost like it is having that intention of dissolving. You know what I mean? Like, rather than spontaneous happenings in life that will come one way or another, we are seeking to dissolve our ego, our identity, through other means, right? Through the different spiritual paths, whether it's great devotion to a God, whether it's silence, whether it's service, all those things can be means in which we seek that dissolving, you know?
Yeah. And I think, kind of to your point, spiritual traditions give us a structure, a scaffolding for understanding suffering. And, you know, I know, so my husband is an atheist, and, you know, he would argue that there's no path, or like, we had a conversation last week where he was basically saying that in some respects, the hero's journey is simply like a human description, or, you know, a human understanding of our evolutionary nature, right? Mm-hmm. That in order for a species to survive, it's going to have to be able to adapt through obstacles and through suffering. So the hero's journey just articulates what we experience through the process of evolution. For me, having grown up with this devotion to Jesus and the teachings that, you know, suffering brings, you know, perseverance and clarity, and Jesus suffered and all of that, even if I don't believe those things anymore, that laid a foundation for me to also get to this point where I've been able to see I didn't see it at the time, but, you know, to realize like, oh, a dark night of the soul, like, okay, this is going to suck. And I mean, I've experienced a lot of suffering in my life already, but that it's not the end of your world. And I think that is what the spiritual traditions teach us. I mean, it is the end of the world in some ways, but it doesn't have to defeat you. It doesn't have to, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I mean, it kind of speaks to that. And so I think that that's that is definitely one of the helpful things of having a spiritual tradition, is just that it gives you a place to start for understanding that there can be good that comes of suffering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's, it's easier to find like words and language and symbols to latch on to find meaning, right? There isn't, you know, in any tradition, spiritual tradition that's worth its salt, there's going to be an element of finding meaning for suffering, right? Whereas with, you know, I don't know about atheists per se, but we'll call them hardcore materialists who are firm that there is no, that matter is everything, and you know, there is no essence behind it. It's just matter. I don't think that you can find good meaning behind this, at least for the individual, maybe for the collective species to evolve better. But that individual's suffering, you know, one of my moments that shifted for me was not somebody that I know directly, but indirectly, a friend talked about his, a close friend of mine talked about his best friend committing suicide when he was like 18 or something like that. And he talked about how he suffered basically his whole life, and then he took his life. And I know that that's not an uncommon story, unfortunately, but it really hit me because it was one of the closer examples that I'd heard in my life. And it just really struck me like, so how do we explain that? You know, I mean, we can't just say, well, you know, the Christian answer didn't work for me anymore because the friend happened to say that he wasn't a Christian. So guess he's going to hell now because he wasn't a Christian. And I was like, well, no, because so you're saying his existence was suffering and then he's going to go to hell and suffer? Like, that doesn't make sense. And then the, you know, the materialist that says that he was just a, you know, a collection of atoms and nothing more than that. So that those kind of things caused me to go even deeper to think, well, there has to be more behind all of this, that provides meaning for this suffering. And so I think that whether it's personal individual suffering or suffering that we experience, indirectly, I think it can always be this invitation to, I guess that's it, an invitation to expand our horizons and think, you know, just ask those questions, not necessarily have to have the answer, you know, but just ask mm-hmm. the question, like, is there something more? There must be something more than just this raw suffering that is so prevalent in our world.
So you raise a couple of points that I think we're going to have to come back to in a future podcast. So one is, do we need to have meaning? Like, do we need to have meaning? Do we need to have purpose? I mean, our society is addicted to this sense of having purpose, right? I mean, what is my purpose? You know, why am I here? You know, that whole thing. Do we have to have an answer to those things? Does that even matter? And the other one, you know, is, what is suffering and do we have to experience it? Do we have to experience it? You know, whether it's good or not, do we have to experience? So, but I want to switch gears and ask, do you think that everyone is on a spiritual path?
Short answer, yes. but that goes into my, again, more, I guess my reformed belief in a way, which is, again, I think we all are going to have beliefs, even as much as we may not want to. It's just a matter of holding it more and more loosely. But my belief is again, that there is, you know, we are beings that are not just the physical form, and that there is an essence behind all of this. And to me, I think that that is something that is working out its kind of essences moment by moment all the time, right? For everybody. And I think it, to me, it's been a really helpful perspective for me, because like, as you know, as we know, as anyone listening knows, like, I'm really into this stuff. I love to talk about it. I can talk about it all the time. And honestly, there was a spiritual ego that arose in me a while back. And because I was like, well, man, I'm really into this stuff. What makes me more into it than others? And the further along I've kind of gone with sitting with this stuff, the more I've realized, like, it just manifests differently to me. You know, there's nothing that makes me a more spiritual person than someone who never talks about it, than someone who never thinks about it. Because who am I to say, right? Who am I to say that like my spiritual essence is more notable than another's? You know what I mean? I just think that there is this essence that is unfolding in everybody, everywhere, whether they realize it or not, whether they can define it or not. So it's been, again, am I going to say dogmatically? Yes, absolutely. Everybody's on a spiritual path, but no, but that's what I think. I do think that there is that behind the scenes essence that is kind of unfolding through everybody's life form.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I will say everybody is sitting in a puddle, whether they know it or not. They're circle. Sitting in a puddle. shall we keep going? Because I'm thinking, let's leave the Christianity part so much and go into a little bit of the consciousness type of path that we are both sort of exploring. Mm-hmm. And let's dip into it a little bit and talk about the spiritual paths that mm-hmm. we have found there. And and you're really good with this. So let's let you take it from there with like the consciousness
stuff. So it's funny that the different courses our conversation can go, but when you talked earlier and you mentioned Rupert Spira, for anybody listening, Rupert Spira, check him out. He may not be for you, just to be honest, but he's worth a check out. He's got great YouTube videos. Anyway, Karen, when you mentioned his video, I was like, I remember watching that one. It was really good. His video about the spiritual path is 12 chapters, and the end of the first chapter is the self-realization. And that is his definition of the direct path. And I say direct path because I've heard him say it so many times. If I was not listening to him, I would say direct path, but direct path. But that's an interesting one to me, is the comparing the direct and the progressive path. And, you know, so what's interesting to me is, I guess how I would define the direct path stopping what you're doing whenever you're doing it and just asking the question, who am I? Who is aware of this experience? And directly accessing the source from which all things come. It sounds really like big and grandiose, but it's really not. It's simple, because it's just a matter of like, okay, what is it that's aware of my experience? Where is all this coming from? And, you know, the reality is that at least in terms of how I've experienced this, like I can't say, oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. Like, it kind of goes to what something that Jesus said, to bring it back to Christianity for a second. He's like, the kingdom of heaven is not something that you could say, oh, look over there, there it is. Or, oh, look there, it's there. And he said, it's within you. But I think that the same applies to really all the spiritual paths, that we do this inquiry, and the direct path says, I do an inquiry to say, what is the source of all of my experience? And we can't necessarily observe it, or we can't necessarily define it, you know, but it's experiencing that. And then, yeah, I would call that, and a lot of these paths, as you know, call it consciousness, right? Consciousness is the primordial essence that is prevailing above all things, right? Consciousness is always there. And you know, the thing that's helped me a lot, I will say, is meditation, because meditation seeks to still the mind and still the body. And those little glimpses in meditation that I've had where like my mind is actually quiet, because normally it's not quiet in meditation, even though I want it to be, but it just is always kind of crazy. And then the body is still. So, okay, so my body is still, my mind is quiet. Well, what is it? You know, and that, the more that I can get there, the more I rest in like, there, that's me. That is the primordial essence here. So, so anyway, to piggyback off what you were talking about earlier with the direct path, I've been really drawn to the direct path, by Spira, and just in the non-duality thinking of like, let's find the source from which our experience is coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's an interesting juxtaposition. I mean, I was new to the whole idea of a direct path and consciousness and awareness. And I had always thought, yeah, I'm conscious, or, you know, I'm aware that I'm doing something. But this is taking it to a different level, where your consciousness is an awareness of that essence that makes you, you. You know, it's what is it to be you? And, you know, that's very different, because once you start thinking about that, of like, okay, well, what, like, who am I? It's like, well, you're not your thoughts. You're not your body. And, you know, I always use my obituary analogy, right? Like, if you're writing your, you know, if someone's reading your obituary, nothing that they read in there is going to be able to describe who you are, because you're none of those things all of the time. And you're just us as human beings are so much more dynamic. So anyway, I was totally new to all of that. And for me, I found that direct path stuff almost as the explanation, or like giving words to something that I had already experienced. And I think I came to this point, I arrived at this self-realization point from what Spira would call the progressive path, like what you mentioned earlier. And he, you know, he even says that the progressive path is the more traditional one. And it's sort of the path that all of the religions are on. This, you know, discovering your shadow self, right? You know, what are your sins? We would say in Christianity, but I don't even want to go there, because that just, there's just way too much baggage there. But, you know, this looking at your shadow self, finding your identity in something that is not like your thoughts or your body. You know, like we had this whole thing of, you know, being hidden in Christ, right? That's kind of what the Christian would say. But what does that mean? Of course, too much to go into, but you know, this idea that your identity is in something that is not actually you, this mind body that we show up in. And so that's kind of the progressive path. And I think that you see the same thing too in a lot of the self-help stuff. Right? A lot of the self-help stuff is, you know, your triggers, your subconscious. And for me, this was just like such a relief to see that the spiritual path and the self-help path really are one and the same thing. But the, you know, the thing too that in this video that I listened to with Spira that was interesting is that the direct path is kind of saying you don't have to go through all of that work of, you know, going through your triggers and identifying your shadow selves and doing all of this deep self work in order to come to the point of self-realization. That's, you know, kind of what he is saying there. But it's interesting, because if you get to the self-realization through the direct path, he is also very clear that, kind of like what you were saying earlier, that's not the end. That in that sense, that's the beginning of your journey. And then once you're at this place of self-realization, you can undertake the shadow work and figuring out how to integrate the self-realization into the rest of it. So it's almost like I felt like I took the progressive path to get to self-realization. Mm-hmm. And I'm now, you know, also doing the integration, but from a more clear place because I have done so much of the shadow work and all that kind of stuff. Whereas someone else could use a direct path to get to the point of self-realization, but then still need help figuring out how to integrate that into all the other aspects of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly how I understand this stuff. And I think it really can be applied to the traditions across the board, as you say. And something that's arising as I think about this direct path and really trying to think of another way to describe it, but just that self-realization, that realizing your true nature, realizing, and another way, a way that I think is palatable across the board is true self and false self.
Right, because
some people, let's face it, are not going to resonate with this idea that like you are the unitive consciousness manifested. you are a manifestation of God. Like I believe
you are
those
the world.
Things,
the
yeah,
world is
I believe
in
those
you.
Things. You are the universe. You know, you are the universe experiencing itself. Like honestly, I say that like stuff like that resonates with me, but I'm not. I don't know. This is what resonates with me. And I think that's what's important a lot. But anyway, so to not use those, the true self versus false self, I think most can resonate with that. And a lot of the journey is coming out of that false self into the true self and resting in that true self. And the direct path is saying, it's really right there. All you have to do is turn and look at it. And bring your awareness to your true self, and that's it. And so then I think the integration still goes. So basically how you're describing it, and my experience is similar, right? Where like I went through a progressive path, had pretty significant spiritual experiences that really, I would say like raised my consciousness within me, that really connected me with the divine in ways that I didn't even understand until I look back. I'm like, oh man, that was significant. But I think that wherever you are, once you reach that point of finding your true self, your true essence, the benefit becomes, and the thing I think that we can most latch onto is stepping outside of your frame of reference in your life experience. So rather than experiencing your life through your five senses, right? And thinking of your frame of reference as through your eyes, stepping more and more into this kind of outside of your body mind and just observing the life that's happening. And then I think the suffering just becomes, you know, it's still there. Or the pain is still there, but you're removed from it a little bit and just aware of it happening. You're observing it happen, so that integrative work appears to still be necessary. All right, there we still need to go through that shadow work, that psyche cleansing, whatever we want to call it. But we can look at it from a more detached way when we've had that direct path kind of experience or visualization or whatever you want to call it of our true nature.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot lately is that there seems to be this point where some things diverge, where the spiritual paths diverge. And I think that they're all looking for the same thing, but so that I think examples would be better. So for Christianity, you know, like you said, the destination would be heaven, right? Mm-hmm. And we think of heaven, there's no pain. It's all peaceful. You know, you're in the light and presence of God. And So, you know, there's no evil. It's that kind of a, like of a better place, right? Then you have other paths that are sort of like law of attraction, right? You know, you put your vibe out there and the universe will give it back to you and you're going to live a life of manifesting your dreams and all this kind of stuff. And the thing that I've been kind of wrestling with a little bit is that one, I'm super content. Like I have a level of contentment and peace that I have never, ever experienced before in my life. Mm. And I have an ability from practicing being in the moment and practicing the now and really training my mind for that. You know, I have an ability to find that place of peace and contentment, even whenever there's chaos around me, which is something that I certainly never had before. And I'm really finding contentment and just being in this mystery of like life, like you said, like life unfolding. But it's not sexy. It's not that heaven. It's not that life of manifesting your dreams. It's not that. And definitely early on in my journey, I really wanted it to be that. It was exactly that destination thing. I really wanted, you know, becoming the butterfly to be the beautiful, wonderful thing. It's like, but butterflies still get eaten by birds. Butterflies still die. You know, butterflies still get sick. Butterflies still break their wings. Like it's not, you know, there's certainly beauty to this journey. And I value the peace and contentment that I have now, but it's in that sense, it's actually, I had this image come to mind. There's a book by Mo Willems called Waiting is Hard. I don't know. Mm. He has the elephant and piggy books. Anyway, Piggy is like, I want to show you something, Gerald. And Gerald, the elephant's like, I can't wait. Waiting is so hard. Waiting is so hard. And Piggy's like, oh, but it's worth waiting for. It's worth waiting for. And they go through the whole book. You know, Gerald, the elephant is just like falling apart because he hates waiting. And Piggy keeps reassuring him that it's worth waiting for. And at the end, the thing that Piggy wants to show Gerald is a night full of stars. What you see every night when you look outside. And, you know, Gerald is like, oh, that is really beautiful. But it's the sort of thing, and that's kind of how I feel about this self-realization journey, is that it's not going, like your external circumstances could not change one whit. And yet internally, you're in a completely different place. And it's with this elephant and piggy analogy, is like, you see the nighttime sky all the time. Like you can look at your window any night and you can see stars and a moon, but yet it's the thing that you see all the time. And yet there's something different and new about it. And that's what, for me, that this kind of like frustrating aspect of the spiritual journey is about, is that it's not sexy. It hasn't turned out the way that I wanted to. So far, I haven't manifested $1 million and paid off my loans and been able to buy a boat and take our family on a sailing trip and have all of my woes relieved. Not a single thing about my external life has changed. Mm-hmm. But this journey, this internal spiritual journey that I've been on, has been incredible. And I wouldn't change it. And now I feel content that this is what it is. And I don't even need that hope of heaven anymore, or that draw to like manifest something new, but I'm able to just accept it for what it is. And it's kind of like that detachment that you're talking about, that when you're in this place of self-realization, you're a little bit more detached from the difficulties and some of the challenges, but it's not a negative detachment. It's that, like, you're still present and you're still in it, but at the same time, there's a peace and a contentment that we've been able to tap into that's available to us. Mm.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, that is how you're saying this is helping me see really in a powerful way, a difference in this, especially in the kingdom of heaven, right? It's funny how, you know, we could have all these conversations about all these different avenues, all these different paths, but like our like instinctual response so often is Christianity. It's so funny. It's so funny how that works. Anyway, the kingdom of heaven is within you. The kingdom of heaven is within you. That keeps arising. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I think we can think of that and be like, oh, like there's this magical place within us that we just have to find it within us. But what if, and what you, how you just explained that is helping me see it maybe a little differently. What if it's more like the kingdom of heaven is an inner transformation, and that's it. Exactly like you said, it's not sexy. It's not, you're going to have these great things. It's not these externals. It is, you are transformed within so deeply that heaven arises. That is the heaven that they speak of. And so the other thing that I keep going back to, and I know you and I've chatted about this a little bit, but the ancient Zen saying about before and after enlightenment, right? You know what I'm going to say. But for anyone else who's listening and is unfamiliar, there's this ancient Zen saying that says, regarding before and after enlightenment. So before enlightenment, you carry water and chop wood. After enlightenment, you carry water and chop wood. And it can sound so like, oh, like exactly what you're saying. Like, why would I want to be enlightened? But I think the difference becomes like, after enlightenment, that person who's carrying water and chopping wood is so content. They're just, it's good. They're not complaining about what they're doing. They're just like, yep, this is what it is. And I am here. I'm content. I'm perfectly content. And that's it. Becoming content with whatever it is that we're experiencing. Like, that is it to me. You know, I love to step into the mystery and the unknown, but man, if I'm going to be dogmatic about one thing, it's that like the spiritual path should lead us to a point of just peace and contentment with whatever is arising, and not seeking that peace and contentment in something else other than what is right now.
Mm-hmm. See, I feel like the elephant and piggy waiting is hard is like the kids or modern version of before enlightenment, chop wood, after enlightenment, chop wood. Because it was like, sure, before enlightenment, you wait for the night, and after enlightenment, you wait for the night, but you just look at it with different eyes. Mm-hmm. In one, you see it as a gift, right? Like, in one, you see it as not a big deal. It's just like your typical everyday thing. And then in the other, you see it as a gift and just the ability to be here now, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think too, you see it as a gift, and you just get to this realization that it's just like, this is it. And you could say this is it in so many different ways, right? You could say this is it. Ugh. You could say this is it. Or you could say this is it. Yep.
Yeah. This is enough.
And there's such, and in that, I think is the word surrender comes to mind. You just surrender to what is, and you can just be with whatever is, even if it's pain. And just be there, right? Just be there in it. So pain will come, of course. But in that example of the stars, I will say nature is a great, great spiritual avenue. And when I'm in a good place, cause it still comes and goes, you know, I have spiritual highs, spiritual lows, we all do. And in those seasons of spiritual high, being in nature is amazing. And because you just reach this point where you're like, everything is good. I'm perfectly content with everything right now, regardless of what is happening. And yet you can just slow down more and just appreciate nature and the beauty that it is. Like, you can look up at the stars and just be like, have this sense of like awestruckness more than you would in a different state of mind.
Yeah. I mean, I had a moment, I guess we should probably wrap up here pretty soon, but I had a moment a couple months ago where I was driving down the road, and this came after a long season, 10 years of basically like not liking where we lived, not wanting to be in our town, wanting to be somewhere else. And I was just driving down the road and I had this thought, like I was just overcome with a sense of like, this is enough. Like I could die right now. And this life was enough. And I hate the word enough because it always, it implies a comparison of some sort, but it was that sense that like, I'm content with what this is right now in this moment. And like you say, it does not last very long, but that's one of the things that, I think using our mind as a tool that I want to continue to cultivate by being more present in the moment and just sort of sitting with that question, or with that just concept that wherever I am right now, it's sufficient. It's enough. It is what it is, and it's good and it's hard maybe, but I don't know that, just being okay in the moment and having that distance from knowing that this, whatever's happening, this mind, body, whatever the circumstances are, I am not that. I'm more than that. I'm greater than that. I'm beyond them, but also just making space for that peace in the moment.
Yeah, that's so good. And yeah, we'll wrap it up with that. And we'll just say again to the listeners, thanks for listening. And really want to encourage you to ponder this, this point that we're ending on here is, what is something this week that I could be content with? What is something that I'm wrestling with that I want to change? I want it to be different because I think I'll be happier if it's different. What is one of those things that you could say, this is enough, as Karen said, this is enough. And just really encourage y'all to ponder that. And as always, would love to hear from you. So feel free to shoot us an email. It's at from believing to being at gmail.com. And yeah, let us know if these ponderings strike anything within you, or if you have questions or just want to connect and talk to us. Always, we are excited about any of those opportunities. So thanks again for listening.
And before you cut off there, Dave, I just had a thought as you were saying that, to be content can also be thought of as, where are you resisting your spiritual path? Like, where are you resisting where the path is drawing you forward? And how can you surrender to that? All right, I'm done. See you later, everybody.
All right. Until next time.